Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 28th of March. A delight to have you with us. 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Got a lot going on, a lot to talk about, and a wonderful panel to do it with. We also welcome your letters. We live on your letters. We like to get your letters. We read some of your letters. We can't get to all of your letters, but we do enjoy them. panel@wamc.org. Just keep them short to the point on the topic that we're talking about at the given time. Also, pre-read them so we understand what you're saying. And if you're someone who writes several times a day to us, maybe, you know, give a chance to another person, right? Does that all make sense?
Yeah, equity.
Great. Yeah, that's right, equity. Thank you very much. Let me introduce our panel to you. David Soares is here. He is the Albany County District Attorney, and he takes time out of his incredibly busy schedule to join us, and we couldn't be more thrilled. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Great pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Jen Smith is here. She is a reporter for the Berkshire Eagle newspaper.
Berkshire Mafia.
And she joins us on Wednesdays, and good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Thank you very much for being here. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She joins us on Wednesdays as well as many other days, and we're thrilled to have her today. Good morning.
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
Communications consultant. Thank you. Dr. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hi, Joe.
How's everything going?
Good.
Excellent. That's good to hear. I like that. I like your enthusiasm. We have a lot going on. Again, panel at WAMC.org, if you would like to send a letter on the topics. A quick note on something that we have coming up that I would just like to talk about for a moment or two. We have a very special event coming up on April 20th, which you'll note that April 22nd is Earth Day. So April 20th, we'll have our roundtable Earth Day special and an amazing panel coming together to talk about climate change, climate science. And we are doing this. We sort of burst at the seams. So we originally were going to do it over at the Linda. We're now going to do it at Page Hall and take over the University at Albany downtown campus.
Wow.
So we have tickets made available to folks. It's free. It's open to the public. You just have to reserve your tickets. So all you have to do is go to WAMC.org. And on the front page of the website, you'll see the link for going to Eventbrite and getting your tickets. So get them while we have some, because we put it up last night and there's already like 50 gone. So you want to do that pretty quick.
Why don't you tell us who's on the panel?
That's right.
Incredible
so
panel.
This I'm going to do this in
Incredible.
Alphabetical order. Judith Enck, obviously former EPA administrator and also regional administrator and also our dear friend and roundtable panelist. Jeff Goodell, who is one of the great environmental writers of our time, is a contributing editor at Rolling Stone magazine. He's just written a new book on water and the rising waters, and it's already a bestseller. It's an incredible book. Jeff, if you just put in Jeff Goodell Obama and look at the interview that he did with President Obama walking along the Alaskan coastline in the last year of the Obama administration, it is an incredible interview. He's done some amazing climate work. He'll be joining us. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Elizabeth Colbert, who is the
we
author.
Love her.
Yes, we do.
She's incredible.
She has written The Sixth Extinction. She won a Pulitzer Prize for that. She was right here in Albany for many years. Was a Albany bureau chief for the New York Times, correct?
And now she's based in the Berkshires.
Now she's based in the Berkshires. And we are thrilled to have her with us.
What a homework.
And last... Berkshire Mafia, David. Mm-hmm. And then last but certainly not least, Terry Tempest Williams, who is just one of my patron saints. She is a beautiful naturalist and writer, has written a series of best-selling books on nature. The last book was on the national parks. She is a fierce advocate and activist for what is happening currently to our national monuments and our national parks. She is a right now this semester semester. She is the writer in residence at Harvard Divinity School, and I believe she's also teaching at Yale at the same time. So she's taking time out of her schedule to come and join us, and we're thrilled. Alan and I will host. We welcome you. It's Judith Eng, Jeff Goodell, Elizabeth Colbert, Terry Tempest-Williams. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org, and reserve your tickets now. We wanted to make this open to as many people as possible. We're going to have a lot of school groups there. We're excited and thrilled about that. If you know of any school groups or you know of any teachers who would like to bring their students, let us know. We can accommodate, and we'll make that happen. So that event is April 20th, 9 to 11, Page Hall, University at Albany. And we'll be there, and we're thrilled to have you with us.
You know, hearing any one of those would be a treat, but all four of them together, wow, what a combination.
Yeah.
And that's astounding.
It's going to air live, obviously, from 9 to 11. It'll be our roundtable panel for that day, but we would love to have you in the audience, and we'll be a Q&A and all that good stuff.
That's a,
quite an impressive
quite a powerhouse
group.
All right. Well, thank you very much for, we'll be talking about that over the next couple of days and weeks, just to fill up the seats and make sure that you know about it. Let's get to the events for today, which are all very important, and figure out what's happening in this big old world of ours. We begin. Census. This is a Teresa Bourgeois issue that she has been talking to us
about
for months. And so the top story of the New York Times today, at least 12 states are ready to sue Donald Trump and the Trump administration over the census citizenship question. Here you go. At least 12 states signaled Tuesday that they would sue to block the Trump administration from adding a question about citizenship to the 2020 census, arguing that the change would cause fewer Americans to be counted and violate the Constitution. New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said he was leading a multi-state lawsuit to stop the move, and officials in Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Massachusetts, I'm sorry, your ringtone must be Creedence Clearwater Revival.
And it isn't me.
Officials
it's
in
my alarm bell about the census.
Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Washington said they would join the effort. The state of California filed a separate lawsuit late Monday night. The census is supposed to count everybody, said Maura Healy of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This is a blatant and illegal attempt by the Trump administration to undermine that goal, which will result in an undercount of the population and threaten federal funding for our state and cities. Of course, the Constitution requires that every resident of the United States be counted in the census every 10 years, and whether or not they are citizens. The results are used not just to redraw political boundaries from school boards to House seats, but to allocate hundreds of billions of dollars in federal grants and subsidies to where they are needed most. Alan.
Well, it's quite clear what's going on. We do know the Republicans in this country have regularly tried to limit the number of people who get to the polls. And they have taken advantage of where they can of the gerrymandering of state legislatures leading to congressional seats. That all figures into this. So by putting this on the questionnaire, obviously, we can all follow, right, gang? We can all follow that people are not going to want to take a census where they're being asked, especially if they're here under less than legal grounds, whether they're going to say, yeah, I'll meet your census taker and tell them the truth. That is not, or her, the truth. That's not what's going to happen here.
I think it's the context, too, though. I think if it was a different administration making this measure, it may not be as controversial because the question exists in the American Community Survey. But because under this administration, the way that other policies have been put forth to single out people, to move immigrants, to change districts, to change voting access, that basically the census appears weaponized. And it's why people are saying, you know, if they are approached by a census worker, they're not going to open the doors. There's a movement to just simply leave it blank, which is, and from my understanding, completely constitutional, but it doesn't help anyone. I think there are benefits to having this information because of the $700 billion worth of federal grants and other funding that can be doled out because of census information. But when that information appears that it could be tampered with, used for less than noble purposes, then it becomes problematic.
There is absolutely no trust, you know, with what is happening with this administration. And any time they put forth an agenda, you have to look at it through the political eyes and the motives that they've done other things with. And this one here is just, it's startling because it just harkens back to, you know, the use of census information to manipulate and to derive political benefits. And of course, you'd have to be reminded that, you know, during early formation of our own country, I mean, they counted African Americans, slaves that had no right to vote.
Fifth Amendment. Women weren't considered heads of households in the recent as the 70s.
Exactly. And so we saw the manipulation of those numbers in order to provide, you know, more representation, mm-hmm. you know, for the southern states. And here you, once again, when we're starting to see the shifting of cultural patterns in the United States of America, here you have a party that is so desperate to maintain power, once again, going back to probably the oldest trick in the book, using information about census to try to obtain a political benefit.
Okay, so counselor.
Yes.
You're the only lawyer in the room. I have a question for you. Do they get away with it?
I think they're going to be buried in litigation. And, you know, unfortunately, what's happening in our country right now, depending on where it is you file, you know, your lawsuit, you'll have one outcome. And depending on where, you know, the government in this instance can try to leverage and change venues, you can possibly have another outcome.
Judge shopping.
But they will do that. But here you have another instance where, you know, the leadership of our country is going to engage and create another cultural war that people like us will be sitting around the water coolers debating, you know, instead of talking about real issues that are affecting us all.
If I was a betting man, I would bet they get away with it.
I don't know. I think you have...
There's a lot of red states included in that list.
The problem here, you know, as I see it, even if we were to follow this and say, okay, well, what's going to happen in 3 years if he's successful? The problem here is that, you know, he's going to shoot before he actually aims. There's going to be a lot of collateral damage to the red states that he absolutely needs and right now is playing towards.
So what's that collateral damage?
The collateral damage is the populations and states like his red states that are going to be underrepresented.
They're going to lose the Congress.
They're going to lose too.
Yeah.
Well, the challenge in this case too, if I'm not mistaken, is the time frame too. This proposal got pushed to the table. You know, it was talked about back in December, but pushed to the forefront really quickly before the deadline to change anything on the census. And they've already missed out because of underfunding trial runs of the census. So it's a really problematic decennial survey.
And now to our star who has been warning us about this all along, Teresa.
Yay.
Right. Well, I think this is, as everybody said, this is part of a pattern of attack on the census. And it matters for election purposes, but it also matters for a whole host of other purposes, for research, for funding, whether it's education funding, social service funding, economic development. It matters that this it's done as accurately as possible. There's still no head of the census. There's still very few of the top people in the census. They have dramatically underfunded the census. I did try to find out if they put extra money in the budget that just passed from, you know, that's just funds from now till September. I wasn't able to determine that. But I did read the Commerce Secretary Ross released this announcement in a seven-page memo. But buried in that, he says, quote, "I find that the need for accurate citizenship data and the limited burden that reinstatement of the citizenship question would impose outweigh fears about a potentially lower rate." And he talks about how there is very little empirical evidence that exists about whether adding citizenship question would decrease response rates materially. I don't believe that second sentence.
Anecdotal evidence out there.
I don't believe that that's accurate. I think that they, based on what I've read, there is enormous evidence. And there are ways to determine how many non-residents there are. Because, and also Sarah Huckabee Sanders in the press briefing yesterday Many think that she just did not tell the truth. She said, quote, the citizens question, quote, had been included in every sentence, census since 1965, with the exception of 2010, when it was removed. Well, in fact, it hasn't been.
There was no census in 65.
It hasn't been in the full sentence. Yes, census. It was dropped in 1960.
Okay.
And it has been included in these smaller surveys that you don't have to take those surveys. Mm-hmm. But it has not been in the survey since 1960. And 50. Interesting out today, some of the people within the census must have talked to some reporters because they note that there was a disagreement internally and that the career people believe that this is going to be very detrimental. It's a problem if we don't get the census right.
But to me, maybe the political scientist who's been talking about gerrymandering for a long time, this gerrymander question really does rise to the top. Because New York, for example, has been losing congresspeople for years now. Now, when you get something like this, a New York or a Massachusetts or a California can really start to lose even more congressional representation, and that could be disastrous.
Well, this is a novel new approach to voter suppression. I mean, you know, we start out with voter ID, and well, gerrymandering is certainly, you know, number one with a bullet, but you know, the now weaponizing, as you said, census information.
And also the shifting of resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's voting, but it's also the shifting of resources. If you undercount an area, then you won't get as many resources.
And it's happened before, and so we know that it's an issue to be wary of, right? So in 1999, we had an undercounting of almost 4 million people left out. Imagine if you had 4 million more people's information to accurately allocate those funds. What would change? And so it's more important than ever that we get a fair count, a healthy count. And, you know, there's great argument that there's other questions that should be on the table in future census surveys. But I think, again, what's hampering this one is just the shroud of conspiracy and fear. That's basically, you know, harkening back to the days where the survey was exploited to put Japanese into internment camps. Right. We can't have that again.
And again, as Joe
just about
said,
10 seconds. Go ahead.
This is intended to count residents, not citizens. This is an account of citizens. This is an account of the people who are in the country at one point in time.
We'll hold there. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. Alan has letters as well. We'll be right back. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, Jen Smith, David Soares, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org, where we get letters like the ones Alan is about to read.
That's right. And I want you to know we're getting a lot of letters, Joe, about the Faso interview yesterday on the air. But I'll read the ones that I have that Sarah has chosen for us. Let's see. This is from Greg in Averill Park. A Green Party candidate, Steve Greenfield, has just announced his candidacy for John Faso's seat. Could this be the right sinister strategy? Encourage a bunch of Jill Stein types to run in each CD to split votes and favor the Republican incumbent, especially if taking NRA money is the litmus test, then demonize the Democrat to the new empowered youth vote and steer them to the green. And that's Greg from Albany. Anybody on that? You know, David, as the district attorney, isn't it against, I keep saying this, but I may be wrong, isn't it against the law if they could prove that a candidate running for office has gotten somebody to run as a third-party candidate? I think in New York it may be.
Good luck trying to prove that.
Yeah, good luck trying to prove it. Exactly. Well, that's all right. Robert, our regular correspondent, says, citizen questions on the census. David, please opine on the chance of the Democratic state's lawsuit to prevent a citizenship question from being included in 2020. Do they have a shot?
I think they do. I certainly think you have an opportunity under the Equal Protection arguments that are out there to beat back the effort to include that in the census, but it'll be tied up in litigation for quite some time.
George says
that's the thing. It just further slows down the process of finalizing the census. It just adds another layer of chaos in a system that's already not working.
Well, it's not just the chaos, but again, look for the cultural wars. Look for this to be, you know, your hot topic that people are angry with one another, that further divides Americans.
Mm-hmm. George says, census, we will just all have to declare ourselves as not citizens. My family's been undocumented for almost 400 years. I love some of these letters. Of course, that ain't going to happen. That only helps the other guys. Think about it.
You affect the funding, as you were talking about.
Right. Yeah. Ellie says, if enough people refuse to answer the citizenship question, won't it become useless? No.
Well, again, I mean, people are going to find their own unique ways of protesting what's happening. However, you know, those protests have real impact on, like you were talking about, you know, educational funding, medical funding.
Economic development funding.
Workforce funding is huge, and especially with the statistics out there that the immigrant population is a huge contributing factor to our workforce and our economic stability. And if you don't have the numbers to back them up and say, hey, we need workforce development training in that area, that's going to be problematic.
What's the rationale for asking the question?
What's the rationale? Well, I mean, I've read two different rationales. According to Wailber, and the Department of Justice, you know, this is supposed to provide some enhancements and again protecting people from voter fraud. Right?
Well, the Fox News version of this is that the too many representatives are representing people who are non-citizens, and so that citizens are not properly proportionally represented. And so that you need to know how many citizens in an area to determine the proper representation. And so that there are overcounts of citizens in some areas, and so those folks in those areas are overrepresented.
A new, more elite form of gerrymandering.
Right. That's what they consider it, gerrymandering, on behalf of the liberals.
Now, certainly if we allow this to move forward, what do you think the probability is going to be that it's going to be the blue states that are more impacted?
Well, I think just the discussion is going to dampen down participation in the census. Just discussing it, regardless of the outcome, regardless of the legal outcome and whether the question's there or not, just the fact that it's discussed is going to dampen down participation in the census.
So if you were the Republicans and you were Donald Trump, what would you say to the question we just raised? Why do you need to know this information? What would they say? They would say, well, it's very important. We keep talking about illegal immigration in the country. We should know the information. That's what a census is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. This is not Alan speaking for them. This is just what obviously they would say.
Well, the question doesn't also ask, like, are you legally or illegally here, if I'm not mistaken. It's just a matter of
citizen, yes or no.
Yes. And so I think you have to be careful there. But again, you know, if it's just a matter of voting rights and issues, you can go to the American Community Survey. You can find that information out about local communities. But again, I think it's on the other side of it. If this was presented in a better manner, that you can find valuable information from people to, you know, have more representative resources, and so that representatives can better represent the people who are living, whether documented or not documented, in their communities. You know, they're still accessing resources. They're still contributing to the economy. You need a clear picture, whether you agree with the politics of it or not.
Yeah, planners need to plan for that.
Yeah, planners need to plan. But the one thing that I would, in speaking of planning, bear in mind is that while we're talking about this issue, we're talking about Stormy Daniels, you still have an administration that is packing the courts with very conservative judges who just might buy into the arguments that are being leveled here in favor of adding, you know, this particular question.
Absolutely
in the
right. You're right. Okay, more.
More.
Rick says, good morning, panel. So,
good morning.
So on the subject of gerrymandering, I really want to know your opinions on why. What is the motivation? I understand it's so simple to remain in power, but that's just an overview. Is it to create an authoritarian state? Is it to turn us into a state like China, Russia, or even worse, Guatemala? Is it to undo the New Deal and turn us back to this free-for-all country? I think if people understood the motives behind this, you may have a shift in the center away from the right-wing madness. What are your thoughts? Rick. Well,
Rick, it's about power. I mean, it's really about power, and I think we're so accustomed to seeing it play out right now that we don't even think to question it anymore. I mean, if you're in a district where you have liberals, you have conservatives, you tend as a representative to be more moderate in how you go about addressing the issues. However, if you're in a gerrymandered, you know, district where it's just packed full of, you know, the extreme right, you're going to sound like Louis Gombert. And you can sound like Louis Gombert, and it doesn't matter what it is that you say, because those people are always going to elect you. So when you don't have gerrymandering, when you have districts that are organic districts, it forces the representative to be somewhat more moderate.
Yeah.
And that goes for either side, too, because if you have these gerrymandered districts where everybody's either far left or far right, it's harder to, you know, like right now, Ryan has a hard time controlling his Congress, right? Because you have the Freedom Caucus on the far, far right, and then you have most of them on the far right. There's just, they're polls, and you lose the people in the middle.
And you can't get anything done.
And you can't get anything done.
It alters public perception, too, from that standpoint. It makes it harder because it appears you're living in this kind of neighborhood or that kind of neighborhood. And again, we were talking just now about cultural wars. It creates more tension than is actually accurate.
And then you have a Pennsylvania where, you know, you have actually more Democrats and
yes,
more liberals, but you have more conservative representation because of gerrymandering.
Yes, I want to just go there. I think somebody will misinterpret what I'm about to say, but I think that the Republicans have proven themselves to be more politically astute about how to do all of this.
Absolutely.
They took over the state legislatures as they made it. They knew that that's where it all began, the state legislature. I remember what happened in Texas was unbelievable. They had an immediate gerrymander as soon as they won the legislature, and they kicked out most of the Democratic congressmen. It was unbelievable. Like, six or seven guys just went, whoa, out. They have had their way in the Supreme Court, and it certainly looks like they're going to have their way even further on the Supreme Court.
And the court hears the challenge today, right?
Today, right.
On Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And you certainly see that there's no doubt, Alan, that the Republicans had a decade-long strategy to do this, focused on state legislatures, focused on winning governor's races. They have, what, 33 governors? And you see it in Wisconsin, Texas, Maryland. You see it all over. But also, over time, the courts have pushed back. I mean, the people have pushed back through the courts. But now we'll see, is it today, right?
Well, if they get another one, if they get another judge on the court, that's it. And that will be it for a while. And it looks like they may have more than one.
In Pennsylvania, they've been told to redraw. Texas, they had to redraw. A judge yesterday told Walker again, because he said in Wisconsin that he was going to ignore it. But the judge said that they couldn't ignore it, that they did have to redraw the districts.
Except, Teresa, let me push back and say when you take a look at Roberts and Gorsuch and people like that, believe me, there will be one or two or three more like those guys, and they're not going to be any pushing back. I mean, a Kennedy, who is, by the way, this whole gerrymander thing now rests on, because he is the decisive vote. He voted against gerrymandering restrictions the last time, but he made it clear he could be persuaded. So this is now you got the Maryland case today, which are the Democrats doing it, right. And you have the Republican Wisconsin case coming up, and the one thing that
the courts went against the Republicans in Wisconsin, they went against the Republicans in Pennsylvania, and they went against the Republicans in Texas.
Yes, Teresa, this court, this present court. I'm talking about what's about to happen, and what's going to be coming. Kennedy may. Get some gumption here and go with the liberal minority on the court right now. Might. But I think that the Republicans have really been very clever.
But the other thing is that people just don't vote. Not enough people vote. So even in these gerrymandered districts, if you expand the pie, more people vote. Right.
I think one of the things to be mindful of as we're seeing the Supreme Court, take on, this issue and many of these cases are argued in state court as well, is to be mindful of the pushback in the politics, because certainly in Pennsylvania there have been threats
absolutely
made against the judiciary.
Right.
And when you start to threaten the independence of the judiciary, well, then you're starting to talk about the collapse of democracy.
Mm. But do people know it?
Well,
that you have the presidential candidate, now president, threatening the judiciary.
Well, I understand it, but it's important not to normalize this kind of behavior and to speak about it.
And the best thing that the Democrats have going for them right now is Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Because the popular pushback against Trump is immense. We have seen that again and again in terms of elections. So even though the game is loaded, there are times when even those loaded ways of doing things get upset by a very unpopular president.
Well, and I'd want to be mindful here, and I'd caution the Democrats that it's still about reaching the people with a message and not, being anti-Trump.
Right. And people have to vote. As you said, Alan, if the election were tomorrow, he could win again.
He could. Mm.
All right, let's hold there. We have we're late for a break, so let's do that. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, David Soares, and Teresa Bourgeois. And your letters, panel at WAMC.org. You have one lone letter there, Alan.
One little tiny little letter here. Okay. Chris says, has anyone considered the possibility that another country's intelligence service might have poisoned the spy and his daughter, knowing that Russia would be blamed?
This is the UK. Okay.
Yeah, that's out there in the ether, except for the... The problem is those pesky facts. Mm-hmm. Facts get in the way of that conspiracy theory because of the nerve agent that was used is only produced by a very small and very, very limited places, including Russia. Yes. And it was traced back to the Russian government. So unless the Russian government gave that nerve agent to some other country so that they could
nerve agent expert
country. No, I mean it's the reason they knew right away, and the reason
it
Theresa
would have
May,
to be a really highly orchestrated
conspiracy.
The Russians
much more
would have
difficult.
To be conspiring against themselves. So I understand that is out there in the ether, but the facts, those pesky little facts.
Well, we know what we know. We don't know what we don't know. In other words, people can claim conspiracy about virtually anything.
Right.
But based on what we know, based on the fact that the Russian parliament has come forward and passed a law saying it is okay for us to go into another country if we have somebody terrible here, who is doing disservice to the nation, I think it's pretty far-fetched that it would be.
Well, I think it's been debunked because of what was used, because of the nerve agent that was used, and because it's just not available.
And, poisoning is their weapon of choice.
Right. Mm. And other poisoning has been done with other things. It might be more readily available. But that was the concern about this one, is because it is so dangerous. And boy, Theresa May did a great job organizing. And basically triangulating Trump, so he had to step up and be part of this coalition. Yeah,
she did it. Otherwise, nobody was going to ever believe him about the Russians again. Mm. This is his way out. But again, I want to point out that he was not up front about it. He had somebody, he trotted somebody else out to announce it, because he's still afraid. If the thesis that they have something on him, and that they, and this has been advanced by none less than the former head of the CIA, right? That if they have something on him, he's not going to get out front here.
There is enough proof right now in my mind to demonstrate that there is something going on here, because that man has never, he has never missed an opportunity to tout how much better he has been than President Obama. And so with this expulsion the other day, I mean, he expelled more people than the previous president, but he wasn't out there crowing about it. That just demonstrates to me that he's in the bag.
And just remember that this nerve agent, you know, that Theresa May in her remarks noted that more than 130 citizens beyond the two
were harmed by
were exposed to this very deadly nerve agent. So
I just want to say Theresa May has not done a better job than Theresa Bourgeois has done on the subject of nerve agents.
Yes,
just
I agree.
Amazing.
Years ago, worked on chemical weapons for 2 years.
I am so afraid of you.
Have you stockpiled any?
Not directly on the communications around chemical weapons.
Just wondering what you had out there, Gohs.
You know, Joe.
The look on his face when he asked the question.
A couple of people have been asking me when I tell them that you can see the panel.
Oh, don't tell them.
They don't know that.
That's okay that they don't.
How do you see the panel again, Joe?
You go to WAMC.org and you
tune into your radio.
And then you can do the live stream, and then you can also,
it says live stream, right?
You're right. Yeah. And then you can hear it, and then there's also a button to push, and you can see the live television stream.
Is that the same place that you can get information for the April event on the environmental panel? Is that the same place
it's a clearinghouse.
Wow. Okay.
It's a clearinghouse of information. Thank you, David. Absolutely.
Go listen to the conversation with Faso.
How'd that go?
What was that?
The conversation with Representative Faso.
Well, it was very interesting.
I listened to it from top to bottom yesterday, and I thought it was amazing. I thought the calls were incredible.
Yeah, people were calling in, and you know, it was, and some of them were very, very angry. I thought that, you know, he has his talking points. I think he's wrong about a lot. One of the things I really think he's wrong about is background checks. You know, he has this baloney about what if a father wants to give his son
a son.
Think, why should you do background check on the kid? Well, if the kid is out, you know, if the kid is a potential murderer, you would want to have a background check on
which
the kid.
Which the best case of that, of course, is Newtown, correct?
Yeah. Well, there are a number of, that's perhaps his worst talking point, just because there are a number of parents that have made that tragic mistake, and that it's cost the lives of other people.
But also, if a parent wants to give their child a car, you have to do the paperwork to transfer the car.
And you have to get a license.
You have to have a license to drive. You have to show that you have a license. You have to show that you have insurance. And you have to transfer title of the car. So if you're going to transfer title of the car, what's the argument about transferring title of the gun?
I have to give Representative Faso a great deal of credit, because I thought in his answers yesterday it was just, he's very good at starting off going, you know, Emily, that's a terrific point. You know, we've looked at this, but and then just stopping, like
right,
just
not answering,
just boom, and like, wow, that's okay. That's all we're gonna get.
Well, that's my problem. That's my problem in today's environment, where, I mean, I love Tim Russert, right?
Yeah.
And you could go on that show with Tim Russert and have your talking point and then try to pivot. He wouldn't let him.
Alan wasn't letting him go either, but it was, but you know, you can just get so much from.
No, I
was going to say you can get so much blood from a stone, and I don't mean that.
I got one very negative letter calling me a coward, and the other letters, yeah, and the other letters were all very supportive of the way the program went. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing, and we know who our audience is. You know, this morning, Joe, speaking of which, I was watching Chris Cuomo on with Santorum.
New Day.
Yeah, New Day.
On CNN with Allison Camerata, yes. Yeah.
And I was watching, and he beat the hell out of Santorum. I never saw anything like it. It was brutal.
Santorum deserves it.
Well, of course. And he brought up the question of
CPR.
You want to give them CPR training as opposed to
that Cuomo beat him up so much he needed CPR.
Yeah. It was really something. But I have to say, while I'm a big Chris Cuomo fan on things like that, sooner or later, we've talked about this, sooner or later, he may well have to confront the fact that not everybody do the same kind of job on his brother. That's not easy.
There's going to be a backlash.
Well, he's moving. He's leaving. He's leaving the morning show. He'll be doing the 9 o'clock show opposite Rachel Maddow.
But that won't help
he
him.
He will.
They announced that last week. Primetime show.
But that won't help him.
No, I mean, more to your point.
He'll still have to confront that. Now, right now, I just read that Andrew Cuomo was something like number 12 on the list of Democrats who might be supported for the presidency. You're going to ask me who's number one. I have no idea. But I do know that Kirsten Gillibrand is number 6 or something like that. So we don't know if Andrew will get to the top of that list.
That's 47,138,000 higher than I am.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I'm looking up to.
Can we go?
Can you hold that question?
Sure.
All right. Look at Ray. Look at the.
Hold that tiger.
Baseball's back. Ray, you're pretty excited.
Hold that tiger.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Is it going to be a good year for the Mets, Ray? Yeah. Excellent.
Love that
thumbs
shirt,
up.
Ray. He says
all right.
That every year.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. News with Ray, and then more after this short break. Hey, there you are. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Sorry, Mike. I went too soon there. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here. David Soares, Jen Smith, Teresa Bourgeois. Good morning, everyone. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We just have a fresh batch of letters right out of the oven. They have that cookie smell.
From
so
the census.
Fresh.
I want letters
Kevin
from
says,
people.
New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts will have no state delegates after the census if those illegals bust in to vote for Hillary don't answer their door. I'm kidding, but the president believes it. 2! Unbelievable. What have we become? Okay, panel. Credit Trump and his administration for not hiding their national racist attitudes with the request for this citizen question for the 2020 census. If you're tired of living under this cloud, get out and vote in 2018. That's from Anthony.
Good message.
I agree with you, Anthony. Register and vote.
Good morning, panel. The Second Amendment needs no repealing or rewriting. It needs to be read for the meaning of its words in the order in which they have been written. No American has the right to keep and bear arms unless they are a member of a well-regulated state militia. Subsequent interpretations are the result of centuries of cultural habit, legal error, political spinning, cowardice, and groupthink. If those who now own arms want to keep and bear them, it's they who must move the political mountain to repeal and revise the Second Amendment so that the states unambiguously and only the right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Ladies and gentlemen, it is not a question of what's right or wrong about your interpretation of that amendment. What's more important is what the Supreme Court, I was going to put an appellation before that, you know, what the Supreme Court says about it. That's the problem, right?
Well, you know, in the Heller case, the Supreme Court was rather clear about, you know, having the right to bear arms in your home. However, it also recognizes the ability for the state to curtail ownership of certain things. So if a state wants to ban, you know, a particular weapon, it can, and the courts have recognized that.
Right, and I must say, summer's coming, and then it'll be time to bear arms.
That was such a dad joke.
That was a real good joke. I like that. It's such a.
And how long before
dad joke? I was going to say poetic, but okay.
So Peter says, census. I thought the census is presented as being anonymous. So all boxes are in play. No need to answer hot questions truthfully. Peter in Clinton.
Yeah, the administration has lost its senses.
Uh-huh. Boom. And Michael says...
Oh.
All right. See what we've done now?
I started it. Michael said...
You can finish it, Alan.
Fox News explanation. Just as the Constitution protects all people, not just citizens, U.S. representatives represent citizens and non-citizens alike. Am I wrong? Fox News explanation is wrong, and they know it.
They know
there
it.
They have it.
They know it, but they don't stop it.
All right.
I don't think anybody's operating under the impression that they're a legitimate news source. Or
when you say anybody, they are still the number one cable outlet.
And I think we have to. I've been listening to them a lot just to understand. So, Alan, one of the things, kind of quickly, about the Congressman Faso.
Yeah.
I know you asked about the meeting with students, and he said he'd already met with students. Well, one of the things I thought was interesting from post-March is the students' next agenda is in every congressional district to have a town meeting or some sort of gathering to talk about the gun issue. And they said that yesterday they have over 100 congressional districts where these are set up. Target is 435. So I wonder if Congressman Faso or Congressman Tonko, presumably he would, Congressman Tenney, other people here, Stefanik, will they in fact have these town meetings with students in their district to talk about the gun issue?
Didn't Congressman Faso have his office closed during the entire health care debate, and people were showing up to his office? And
I know so far he's not wanted to do public town meetings.
He says, look, if I do a public town meeting, the people who don't like what I'm doing are going to show up, and they're not going to let anybody talk, and they're going to yell, and they're going to scream at me. I'm sure that that is what the Republicans have been using as talking points. It's certainly true, mm-hmm. I think, with Tenney and, you know, the other people, Stefanik. But when you say Tonko will meet with his constituents, of course he will, because he's not going to have people yelling him down in the place. Am I defending the Faso decision? I am not. I'm just telling you the way it is.
Well, I think it doesn't hurt. I mean, we had our Congressman Neal, who met with students in Pittsfield, and then the students met with him when they were down in D.C.
Democrat. He's a Democrat. He's on the right side where they're concerned.
Right, but we also have cases right now where some Republicans are becoming savvy and saying, you know, it's who you represent, and it's knowing your communities, and if your communities, your constituents, are saying things like, shift the narrative. Mix it up a little bit. Surprise the heck out of people. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, whether they're Republican or Democrat, they're the representatives of the region, and this is a very critical issue right now, and why won't they have a public conversation with the people in their district, young people, and everyone who wants to come?
How bad, I mean, we're getting off the subject here, but how bad is it to, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, if you just have people yelling at you, I mean, you're still making yourself available.
Yeah,
right?
And have some ground rules and say, you know, like, limit it to, you have some control there. If you're doing your own event, coming from an event planning side, I mean, you're going to have someone who's always going to yell. But at the same time, say, you know, we're here to ask questions. We're here to provide answers. You know, make it a clean slate as much as possible.
They are very fearful of the...
Yeah.
Not only the soundbite, mm-hmm. but they're very fearful of that 10-second snapshot of someone yelling at them, which mm-hmm. could only be literally 10 seconds with the rest of the meeting going
but
well.
You know,
but they're
going
just
in.
So fearful of that experience. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I think
that's
going to
happen.
Be...
You can anticipate it. So have a better answer. Take the higher ground.
Hey, man, if you're out there, right, and you're about to abolish, you know, medical care for people who live in your district, and they're going to come out and they're going to yell at you, you deserve to be yelled at. Get out there.
If you think you're right, and if you think you're representing your district, then explain why you think you're right.
We had a story on this morning about a mayor. I wish I remember the town. It was an excellent story, and the meeting got loaded, and everybody was screaming at the mayor, and he called off the meeting.
Well, I mean, I guess there is a point when you get when it becomes counterproductive. Mm-hmm. I understand that, but it seems to me also that if any group is, if any, I think all of you have probably been a part of one of these, where if it's well done, if you have someone with, you know, a microphone, a card system, whatever the case may be, that you can manage order. You
I
know?
Have been right. I have been on the receiving end of those
me too
attacks.
Absolutely.
Okay, and here's the way that I deal with those issues is I listen very carefully, because you know if you're paying attention to the noise, then that's all you're going to hear. But there is substance to what people are talking about. And if you can address the substance, if you can filter everything else and address the substance, you know, people are going to listen. They may not agree with you, but they're going to listen.
Right. And it, you're doing your job. You know,
one of the stories.
Well, one of the great, you know, really fascinating stories I read out of the Sacramento case. The Sacramento Bee did a great story on the one CHP sergeant who was African American, who was standing the lines of the protest there over the weekend, and he got every hateful thing you could imagine hurled at him, saying he was a traitor as a black person and stuff. And there was this whole detailed story about how he was trained in his job to take on that heat, but also do his job and maintain public safety. And he went out there knowing that this was what he was going to have to face. And it was a great, really humanizing story of...
Well, as if I paid you, that's a perfect way to get into that story. Can we talk about that story?
Let's please.
California's Department of Justice will oversee a Sacramento police investigation into the shooting death of Stephon Clark, the unarmed black man who was killed by officers during a vandalism investigation. Speaking in a news conference backed by black fraternity and sorority members, State Attorney General Xavier Becerra and Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn announced the agreement Tuesday. I have complete confidence in my detectives, but due to the nature of this investigation, the extremely high emotion, anger, and hurt in our city, I felt it was in the best interest of our entire community, including the members of our police department. Our city is at a critical point right now, and I believe this will help build faith and confidence. The agreement calls for the State Justice Department to play two roles: to provide independent oversight into the investigation into the shooting of Clark by two officers who encountered him in his grandmother's backyard a week ago, and to review Sacramento's police training and policies on the use of force.
He had a cell phone, right?
Yeah, it was a cell phone. A cell phone in his hand.
How does this keep happening?
You know, it's my question, to be perfectly frank with you, given the amount of interactions in our country, when you consider the number of armed law enforcement in the United States of America, it's a miracle we don't see it happening more often. But the fact that this continues to happen to young African American males, young Hispanic males, is something that has to be looked at very, very carefully. And if you're not a department that has gotten on board with you know, some of the bias trainings and the recruitment, if you haven't got on board with that, then my goodness, it's just a matter of time before this set of circumstances is visited upon you and your jurisdiction.
In this particular case, I mean, there are so many factors that indicate a lot of either undertraining or gross negligence, and also a question of resources. Right now in Sacramento, for example, they're looking at a 2012 case of a homicide that involved the slaying of a young woman and her two young children. So this case has been litigated, and you know, there were tons of warning signs with this case, with this homicide case. And then you have this case going on where there's allocated resources for a car robber that involved a helicopter, multiple police officers, and multiple rounds fired. There's clearly something amiss, I think, with resources. Not to mention that this was a case, if you look at the time frame, how can you see what anyone's color of skin is in the dark? You know, if you look at the time of the call and the time of sunset in California, if you look at the footage, they're using infrared footage from the helicopter to follow a figure. You don't know who it is. Why would you shoot them? And, you know, and then the fact that this man was lying on the ground for 5 solid minutes before any medical attention was brought to the scene.
Well, those are the kind of questions that are going to be answered by what appears to be an independent, you know, review of not only the department's policy, but they're also going to address the issue of culpability and reasonableness of the use of force. I think sometimes when we're talking about these issues, we tend to forget that, you know, the only people authorized to actually use force and to use you know, the force that we're talking about here are police. Mm. So the context that we have to review all of this from and discuss this from is whether or not the use of force was reasonable. Mm-hmm. And you have to take into consideration all of the... All of the surrounding issues, the elements, like you're talking about it being, and I'm not defending what transpired here.
I think it just raises a lot of questions. And if this person, you know, the narrative that we hear is that he was identified as having a toolbar. So if you know someone has a toolbar, there was nothing that said we're looking for an armed suspect with a gun.
Certainly, the communication that goes on during those moments. In other words, you have eyes in the sky, and they're seeing things, and they're communicating and relaying the information that they're relaying to, you know, the men in this instance, the officers that are the closest to the actual, you know, event, and so you do have to take a look at not only what was being said, is what was being said, you know, the kind of communication that you would expect.
And could you have other choices? I mean, could you have used a taser? Could you have used something?
Which the grandmother very eloquently said on the news the other night, why couldn't they shoot him in the leg? Why couldn't they taser him? I taught at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice for 1 year, had an amazing time there, years ago. There's a lot of research being done. This is the elephant on the table about who becomes cops.
That's true. I mean, that's true. And I'll tell you something, that for myself and other leadership in this community, you know, trying to recruit prosecutors, you know, and police officers, and especially young men and women of color, and trying to recruit them to be members of law enforcement. This is how we're going to actually change, you know, how, you know, we enforce the law in this country, is by opening up our doors and making opportunities like this available for all people, men, women. And to be quite frank with you, having a very, very diverse staff, we spread the enlightenment amongst ourselves.
There are certain things that will never get said in a locker room if, in fact, you have a diverse staff.
Exactly, exactly.
So, and maybe I misheard you. I when you were answering the question, making more out of this than I heard. But what do you think of the idea of the California Department of Justice overseeing this investigation? Is that just a something that looks good, or do you think it's actually productive?
I think it's productive if what the community needs in that moment is that independence and the appearance of independence, right?
Because will it be independent?
I think it will, and I'll tell you what happened here in the state of New York a few years back with the Executive Order 147 that offended many prosecutors, and I can speak for our association when I say that we weren't offended at the idea that, you know, the governor was giving this authorization to someone else. We were offended as to the explanation as to why it was given.
And what was that explanation?
That explanation is that we worked too closely with one another, and therefore we couldn't really be trusted to do work independently. Meanwhile, it's what we do every day, and we, in fact, prosecute members of law enforcement when they run afoul. The other thing that was offensive about what occurred in our situation was the fact that it's the attorney general that actually represents state police in legal matters. And therefore, if there's a real conflict there where there's a perceived conflict with us.
And when you leave the WAMC studio this morning, look both ways.
I will.
But I think in the Sacramento case...
Don't you always?
In the Sacramento case, too, I think there's already this air of mistrust. And so I think that, you know... whoever is looking at this case has to do their due diligence to stay on top of it. I mean, you've already got the family, you know, hiring or working with Benjamin Crump, who's, you know, really prominent civil rights lawyer. And in the recent cases like Trayvon Martin case, you also have the family doing their own independent autopsy. And so, again, there's a lot of cross-checking in this case, fact-checking rather, and just wanting to make sure that everything is done right.
The transparency transparency will be the friend to everyone.
Absolutely paramount.
And for us, for example, in the state of New York, where you have a grand jury, you know, we as an association, we debate amongst ourselves about what it is that we can share with the public when we're doing these cases. And my philosophy is, you know, we take a piece of paper, we fold it in half. On the left-hand column is all of the evidence that you can obtain independently of the grand jury. And on the right-hand column is the information that you need that can only be attained by the grand jury. Mm-hmm. And if it's that information from the grand jury, I can't share that, but I can share everything else.
Right.
So we make a conscientious effort to try to acquire as much so that we can, in fact, publicize it and maintain communication and dialogue with leadership and families.
And I think that's key, because I think now more than ever you see families trying to take matters into their own hands, and that could potentially compromise an investigation. And so I think it's why it's really important that that communication be out there, be upfront. You know, we always hear about the cases someone goes missing and you have the police search party, and then you have the, you know, the community folks who go and, you know, do their own measures and run over evidence and things like that. And so you have to be careful of that.
What's we just have about three or four more minutes, so let's do some letters. We have those.
Okay. Joe, credible. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe has made the point very very often, and I want to second it, that when you write a letter to us, be sure you check it before you send it, because there may be something
some
that—
Some spell check will mess you up, man.
Not only
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Okay. Does President Trump's hard stand regarding North Korea and its nuclear testing deserve credit? So far, so good, for what appears to be moves towards, and here comes the words I don't understand, me because I'm not that smart, towards date ant, capital ant,
detente.
From North Korea leader? Date ant?
Detente?
I don't know.
Well, it's a date ant.
I mean, I'm
But we get the point.
Yeah. Dead end. Yeah. Dead end. I mean, I'm 48, and I can honestly say to you that I recall several instances in which North Korea has, you know, walked all the way to the precipice, and then then they've negotiated denuclearization for or restraint on further research for certain benefits, and I think that's exactly what's happening here.
It's true.
Okay, yeah, go
Christine
ahead.
Says, Tonko, Representative Tonko had a town hall on gun issues at Shaker High School last week, is having a town hall at another area high school today. And Bob says, I just tuned in. I don't know if you already discussed this. We have. As New York's former chief demographer, I have little experience with the census. Experience with the census. This is a bad idea. And the express reason for its enforcement, use of census data to identify individuals is illegal, and this proposal should not survive court challenges. And that's Bob from Rensselaerville.
Thanks, Bob.
Very cool.
Thank you, Bob.
We're the neatest people listening to our program.
Yes, thank you.
So what do you make, going back to that early letter, whether it was date an ant or detente, what do you make of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un making the surprise trip to China to meet with President Xi? These are the before the planned summits with South Korea and U.S. leaders. And yesterday, Chinese and North Korean media officials confirmed that the meeting took place.
It's complicated.
It sounds complicated.
And the reason it's complicated is we don't know if he was going to beg and saying, come on, don't make me do this, or whether or not the Chinese, who are winning right now in terms of the Pacific Rim and doing everything, are saying to him, saying to the North Koreans, don't screw it up.
But we should. But and I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is his first visit ever, state visit ever outside of the country. I mean, there's
11 years.
Well, since he took over, right?
Or that about.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's correct.
Okay, so the answer is the Chinese call, they blow the whistle, you come. It's that simple. They are the main source of sustenance to the North Koreans. Mm-hmm. My bet is that there's a possible other explanation for this, and that is that Trump, of course, has been beating up on the Chinese. Mm-hmm. And so maybe this is a signal to Trump by bringing the North Korean leader over there.
Of who's really in charge of this negotiation.
Well, I think there's several things to consider here. The first is, you know, did you ever think you'd see the day in where our standing would be so poor in the world? We used to be the power that would visit with nations to moderate tensions. Now we're having China intercede, you know, with North Korea. That's the first issue. The second issue for me is it just further demonstrates just how much control China has over, you know, Pyongyang, right?
Absolutely.
China is never, will never accept, you know, either an American on its borders or an ally. China needs to have Pyongyang be Pyongyang, period. And it will never do, it will never allow even for him to compromise, you know, that position. As long as you have a boogeyman, a straw man, China achieves what it's always wanted to.
You, sir, get the last word. Thank you very much for being with us. Maybe you always do. I don't know.
Well, you're the That's DA, not fair.
I guess.
That's not right.
Teresa, David, Jen, Alan, thank you very much. We will continue with more roundtable after this. We always love your letters. Panel at WAMC.org.